Welcome back to another episode of the Hitchcock Minute, where each week, Movies by Minute's hosts examine the 1959 Alfred Hitchcock-directed thriller North by Northwest, 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm your host, I'm Alan Sanders with The Wilder Ride.
I am your co-host, Walt Murray, also of The Wilder Ride.
And I'm going to say this again because, you know, no amount of free plugs is too many free plugs, but it's amazing that you and I, having no knowledge of this project when it was announced, had already decided we were going to do Silver Streak.
That's right.
For our season three, which depending when people are listening to these, we are either a month away, if you're listening to it as they're being released starting January 6th, which was last week, all the way through this week. We're not launching till the end of February, but depending, we may already be beginning our season by the time people stumble across this.
Well, in the way podcasts work, somebody may stumble across this 2 years from now, and we're already off on something else.
It's true. That's a good point. So the parallels are fantastic, knowing that Cary Grant, after seeing Silver Streak, did go talk to Gene Wilder and say, "Tell me, that was inspired by North by Northwest, wasn't it?" And Gene Wilder goes, "Yep, absolutely. It was definite. Taken from your film, that idea of the common everyday businessman being embroiled into some intrigue." And Cary Grant said, "I knew it, and I love it. And isn't it amazing that the best thrillers are when you have somebody, an ordinary person, put into extraordinary circumstances?"
Yeah, and that's what we're about to see here.
Yes, we are. Perfect transition into where we are here in minute number 7, where we're, just as a reminder, let's tell you where we're starting out. We just realized that Thornhill needs to send a telegram, and the bellboy was escorting him out to the lobby of the plaza where he could do that. And we are going to start off this minute with Thornhill heading for that front desk, but a large left hand grabs him by the shoulder. And we're going to end with him sitting between two men in the back of a car, trying to be kind of witty and maybe a little smarmy at the same time.
And he plays that well.
He does it such a great job. I'm going to wait till we get there, but I'm going to tell you who he reminds me of when he delivers one particular line.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
So let's go ahead and dive right into it. And we do pick right up where, as the camera is tracking back with him, he's basically walking to the camera. The camera's walking back. So just as the camera is obviously clearing Thug One, we see a hand come from the corner of the frame, and it puts it right on Cary Grant's shoulder. And by the way, if you want to know what time it was, if we were getting out of work at around 5:30, it looks like it's not quite 5:30. So I'm not sure where the watch is in terms of the rest of the day.
Yeah, kind of hard to tell. But
the big hand is heading toward the bottom of the hour, and we can't see the little hand, which looks like that must be pointed somewhere toward the five. So it's looking like it's 5:20.
Yeah,
which throws the whole timeline off of when they were late leaving the end of the workday, unless they left at 5.
Yeah, or he was supposed to meet them at 5.
Maybe. For some reason, I had thought somewhere along the lines that the movie starts at 5:30 rush hour.
Oh,
maybe I read that somewhere, and that doesn't necessarily get said in the beginning. But I do find it interesting that the watch band, we get just enough of a glimpse of the time to realize it's not quite 5:30 yet.
Well, and again, we kind of have those things with when we do the movie by minute. Of course, when they made this movie in 1950, what year did they make this movie? 1959, probably shot in 58. They had no expectation that anybody was going to ever sit down and break the movie down in the detail that we're breaking it down.
In fact, let's leave an Easter egg for somebody right now listening to these minutes. If you come and go or whatever, if there's just certain people you're listening for, you need to come back for the team that's going to break down the scene inside the lodge just outside of Mount Rushmore, where there is a shooting, because there is a wonderful shot of a kid who's aware that gun's about to go off.
Yes.
But Hitchcock himself, who would have been a stickler for editing, had to realize the performance of my main actors in the scene that I'm using is so good, I'm willing to leave a little bit of a weird extra movement in the background, because chances are no one's going to notice it in the theater. And honestly, until VHS, no one really ever noticed one kid putting his fingers in his ears.
No. And, you know, you think about how technology has changed. We alluded to it a little bit, in previous minute, with not having cell phones at the time and not having any way to communicate. This is another one for us as the consuming audience, that we didn't have DVDs, VHS. We didn't have a way to watch it at home. Mm-hmm. And we sure didn't have the ability to break it down minute by minute like this.
Now, I'm going to play a little funny with the line here, because it is a little weird. He looks down at the guy's, what looks like his watch, and the camera pulls back to reveal the thug with the hat putting his hand on Cary Grant's shoulder. And Cary Grant, or Roger Thornhill, says, "Hey, wait a minute. What's that supposed to be?" I was waiting for him to go, "It's a watch."
"It's my hand."
"It's a wristwatch, you moron."
"You moron."
"You moron. How can you be a spy? You don't even know what a watch is."
"You're really not very bright," which may have convinced them that he wasn't really Kaplan.
Isn't that a weird line? Not, "Hey, what's this it's supposed to be?" Or, "Hey, what's going on?" It's, "Hey, what's that supposed to be?"
"Wait a minute, what's that supposed to be?"
Yeah, that's a very odd line.
And you know, I can't help it. When I watch it 1 minute at a time, he looks down at the watch, then he looks and makes eye contact. He's getting ready to put his hands over the guy's wrist. I was like, "Hey, what's that supposed to be?" I don't know. It's a hand? It's a watch?
It's an odd question.
It is weird. I wouldn't have phrased it that way.
No, I wouldn't have either.
Yeah, I would have had actually a string of expletives, probably.
Yeah, and of course, we know that he's now making the transition from just a guy being a guy going through normal life to this whole misconcoction of who he is and him getting caught up in this thing. So it probably is a little shocking that he's just doing something he's done 100 times before, and all of a sudden he's confronted by these two guys who are obviously tougher than your average guy on the street.
Well, and we're about to get a line here that lets you know that at least one of them has already drawn a weapon and is pointing it into his heart. We're going to find out in a few minutes around the reverse shot that it is actually a small, almost like a Walther PPK, small style handgun pointed into the middle of his back. But I love Cary Grant here. He doesn't understand what's happening. He almost, in fact, he even says, "With this, some kind of a joke? Like, you guys, who put you up to this?"
Yeah, right, right.
And I wonder how many of us in this situation, because we've all seen the spy movies, we've all seen the movies where the action hero is getting confronted by two people. But in real life, how would you react if all of a sudden two sharply dressed men in the Plaza Hotel, one puts a hand on you, the other one comes up and says, "Now, you know, let's be quiet about this." You know, he says,
"Car's waiting outside. You will walk between us saying nothing."
"There's a car waiting outside. You will walk between us saying nothing." First thing, I'd be like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Right.
"Get away." I'd be like, get your paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Well, I had a time a few years ago, I think I've talked to you a little bit about this, that I had a threat, a really viable threat against me because of one of the cases I was working on and some information I had gotten. And for weeks, I was on edge. You know, everywhere I went, I was paying attention. You know, if I went in the grocery store and saw somebody three times, I was changing my walking pattern just to, you know, make sure that I wasn't being followed. And fortunately, that threat kind of went away. But for this guy, he's just walking through normal everyday life. He's just an advertising guy. He's got no reason for anybody to be mad at him, maybe an ex-wife, but he seems to be paying those bills. So he's just a guy walking along, not doing anything to anybody. So he's got no reason to think even that.
And it's
got to
be messing with his brain in the sense like, oh, because I could hear someone saying, but he lives in New York. Yeah, but he's not walking past a blind alley in the middle of the night where you would think, oh, my God, I'm being robbed. I'm being mugged. Yeah. These are two well-dressed guys in the hotel lobby of the plaza in broad daylight. By the way, notice a theme that's going to be through this whole movie. Everything happens in broad daylight.
Yes, it
does. About everything happens in broad daylight. I think not until the very end.
One thing, the drinking scene when he's driving the car.
Oh, well, driving back home. But I'm talking about in terms of all of the public action like this. He's being kidnapped in public. You know, he has a trial in public. He's going to be going back to the house in broad daylight. He gets dropped off at the corner of 41 and Nowhere in broad daylight. There is no boogeyman hiding behind a dark corner.
No. And this type of kidnapping in broad daylight is tough because you don't know what he's going to do. And then you got to think, okay, if he shouts out, are you going to shoot him?
Right.
You know, or are you just going to dump him and keep moving? And, you know, what's your play here if he tries to fight you?
Which makes me wonder what would have happened if he had fought, because it's obvious that their job was to bring him back somewhere. They said, there's a car waiting for you. You're going to walk between us. So their job is to get him.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not to kill him. Otherwise, why not just shoot him right then?
Well, and if this really is Kaplan, if they, you know, whoever this Kaplan is, you would kind of expect Kaplan would be armed.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect that he would also be paying attention and not fall into a trap like this, but that he very well may fight you. And So it's that would not be the time and place I would choose to try to snag him.
I guess they're playing the odds here. It's two against one. One already has the weapons drawn, where we can clearly see Cary Grant's walking up with both hands. There's no weapon in his hand. And if he's got a gun, if they thought he was carrying, there's no way he's getting into the inside of his coat anywhere anytime soon with these two guys already on top of him.
Right, but they don't even check him. They don't even check to see if he's carrying anything.
No, it doesn't look like it.
So
that's pretty confident.
Yeah.
That's always what I do when I'm kidnapping somebody. I just make sure that...
Absolutely. First thing, check for weapons.
Yeah, I figure, you know, they've got whatever. Whatever they have on them, they'll be all right.
Kidnapping 101. Come on, guys.
Get with it.
Get your act together. So,
how long have you been in this Cold War? Would you just start yesterday?
What is this, your family's first kidnapping?
Come on.
Are you a Griswold?
So we continue on. He says, what are you talking about? And the other guy says, let's go. He points a small gun into Thornhill's ribs. We don't really see the gun.
We get a little flash of it because I was trying to figure out what kind of gun it is.
Oh, yeah, you do see just a little bit. You're right. Just as he brings his arm down from his shoulder to go put it like in the crook of Cary Grant's elbow to kind of hold on to his arm, you do see just for a moment that small little black, what looks like a very small snub-nosed, it looks like, again, like a Walther PPK, something small. Yeah. It's obviously as small as his hand.
Yeah, it is definitely small. It's I'm guessing it's kind of a prop gun.
And not a revolver.
It's not a revolver. So I think there's one other scene here in a second where we get another glimpse.
When you get a shot from the back as they're walking out.
I think it's just a prop.
Well, I mean, it's a real, of course it's a prop. I don't think they really had a loaded gun in Cary Grant.
Oh, well, I don't know. You know, come on, Grant, get your act together.
I mean, obviously it is a...
But I don't think it's one that they repurposed for the movie, you know?
I don't know. It looks very similar to the one that the girl's going to end up having in her purse later.
Yeah, which I didn't really look too closely.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah. Yeah, you should probably rewatch the whole movie.
I probably should.
I know we only paid attention to the first 10 minutes. That's all we're supposed to actually report on. But
that's right. No, I've watched it, the whole thing.
I've watched it a couple of times. It's really, really
it's
good.
It's a great movie.
It is really, really good. He says...
What are you talking about?
Let's go.
Let's go where? Who are you?
Mere errand boys carrying concealed weapons. His is pointed at your heart. So please, no errors of judgment, I beg of you.
Let's go, says Roger. Who are you? Mere errand boys carrying concealed weapons, says Valerian. His is pointed at your heart, so please, no errors of judgment, I beg of you. It's not quite of an accent, but it's spoken in a way that almost sounds like English isn't his first language.
Right. I was going to say he doesn't come across as American.
No. It's not a foreign accent, though. It's just words delivered in sort of a different speech pattern.
Right.
Says, I mean, mere errand boys carrying concealed weapons. Who says that?
Which is kind of an ominous, ominous line.
His is pointed at your heart, so please, no errors in judgment, I beg of you.
Yeah, and it is a, it's interesting because they don't, you know, they don't say, oh, we're with this agency, or we're the cops, or we're anything. They're just like... You mess with us and you're dead.
No, you just come with us. You don't need to know who we are.
Don't need to know.
And it's funny is even with that threat and even noticing the gun pointed right there, his next line, Thornhill's line is...
Oh, come on, fellas. What is this, a joke or something?
Yes, a joke. We were laughing in the car. Come.
This is ridiculous.
Oh, come on, fellas. What is this, a joke or something? I don't know. Something if I've seen a gun in my ribs, I'm not thinking it's a joke anymore.
I was going to say, I've got friends with bad judgment, but I think most of them know not to put a gun in your ribs as a joke.
Well, then you get your typical thug line coming back. Licht goes, yes, a joke. We will laugh about it in the car.
That's a great line. I love that line.
By the way, I believe it's Licht. We don't get a sense that he's a pilot. But keep in mind that you've got the two thugs in a lot of the scenes until a particular moment in the movie, and then you don't see this other guy anymore.
That's right.
They never establish he's a pilot, but keep in mind that these two guys seem to have always worked the room together wherever they are, whether it's an elevator, an auction house, or wherever they're following him, until later in the movie. Then all of a sudden, they're down to just one thug.
That's right.
All right. So we move along. Cary Grant's character here, Roger Thornhill, says, "Now this is ridiculous." And the two of them are starting to drag him to a side exit. And again, I can't help but notice that this is all happening right in broad daylight. You know, as we're walking out the street, we see it's daylight outside. There's a car waiting right by the curb. No cop came by to say, hey, come on, if you're not picking up or dropping off, move along. Different time where you, I guess, You could park on a curb, wait for a customer, or wait for your, I mean, it looks like there's a driver in there. So maybe that's a standard practice. You would just sit there by the door waiting for whoever you were giving a ride to.
I guess so. Maybe they had not been sitting there long enough to cause a problem. But you would think at the Oak Room that the car would drop somebody off and keep moving. And I'm surprised you didn't have a doorman there or anything.
Yeah, the first guy gets the door while licked with his helmet, with his hat on. He's keeping Cary Grant with the gun to his back. So the first guy opens the door, gets in, crawls across, and then Cary Grant's basically forced to duck his head in and get in. And then Licht gets in behind him. They're all kind of keeping an eye down the street. We see the gun. I think this is an interesting, this may be a little bit of a continuity error. I'm trying to see where the gun hand is. Because he's got the gun
it's his right hand.
He's got the gun in the right. He switches to his left. Nope, it's perfect. And then he switches it back to his right.
See, and that's where you see it one more time as they get in the cab.
Well, the back of the car. It's not a cab.
Oh, yeah, the back of the car. He has it in his hand, and you catch just a glimpse of it. But I can't tell there what it is either.
No, it's a very small, compact. I would call it very much a subcompact automatic.
Oh, yeah.
It is not a revolver. It's very skinny. Probably maybe a .22.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Something for a close range like that. Yeah. You wouldn't want something super loud. You know you're using it point blank, so you don't need a lot of range or velocity. A .22 point blank will still kill somebody in the head.
Oh, yeah. Well, the mob used
it. Or even in the heart.
Used it. I mean, it's not one to be ignored. It's it will do a lot of damage.
Oh, in fact, one of the books I read about folks training to be part of special ops and things, they learn a .22 double tap to the forehead is all you need because then the bullet doesn't escape.
Yeah.
Usually can enter one side, but then even if it doesn't necessarily hit the brain, it rolls around inside the skull and actually causes enough damage that way. It doesn't leave an exit wound, doesn't leave a lot of blood, so that you can just kind of walk away and let the person just sit there.
That's right. Yep, and the mob used to put it right behind the ear.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
Just let it bounce around inside the skull.
Yep, and that was the whole point of it. The small caliber would not go through the back of someone's head like, you know, the Hollywood special effects of the day where, oh, we got to see blood splatter everywhere.
Right.
There'd be very little of anything.
Yeah.
Just a little hole wherever
tons
the entry
internal.
Point. No, it's all, scrambled brains inside, but nothing nothing really noticeable on the outside.
Yep.
And oftentimes, like I said, they teach him a double tap just to be sure if the first one, for some reason, doesn't do the damage, the second one will.
Yep, absolutely.
Pop, pop, and then walk away.
Yep, that one shot is not the wise one, so...
I mean, isn't it sad how much we know about this? There's people listening going, God, what's wrong with them? We read a lot.
Yeah, well, and for anybody who has been through any kind of training or carries a gun regularly, you kind of pick these things up.
Yeah, you're a detective and I'm ex-Navy, so.
Yeah, there you go.
And I was in the intel community, so we're technically both in a very similar line of work.
That's
information.
Right. That's right.
And people will kill for it.
Information people may not want you to have or may want to get from you.
Right. Now, is this interesting that he decides to, now that they're in the safety of the car, where there's nobody now going to see them, he decides, well, I better put this gun away. I don't want anybody catching me with
it
out.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
He pockets it.
Yeah, that was weird.
I didn't understand that. It was almost like Hitchcock did such a great job. I was watching the continuity. We just watched the hand shifting, things like that. Very, very consistent. But why would a thug put the gun away? Why wouldn't he at least maybe keep it down by the side of his leg? Or keep it across his lap pointed so that way your victim knows, hey, don't try anything funny.
Because again, they have not searched him to see if he had anything.
That's true.
And if he's got anything inside his coat pocket, he can get to it fairly easily.
And once he's got his hand in his coat pocket, the other guy's got both of his hands in front of him. If he was a trained spy, if he was somebody that they've mistaken to be somebody that might be dangerous, they're sort of leaving themselves open for attack.
It seems
a little silly. Once again, I don't think they've been on the job very long.
No, and the last thing you want in a situation like this is a fight. So you want to keep that on him so that he doesn't try anything stupid.
Right. I don't understand it. By the way, thank you to Jim O'Kane for this little bit of note that he added for us because I hadn't had a chance to look it up. The car they are driving in is a 1958 Fleetwood 75 Cadillac.
Nice.
It is a nice car. You could tell it was nice when they walked up to it.
Yeah.
But a nice caddy. So maybe another reason why nobody thought anything suspicious. You're at the Plaza Hotel.
Sure, it fits.
You've got a caddy sitting there with a driver. Doesn't look suspicious there at all.
No. Uh-uh. Nope. But they are pretty tight fit. And I guess Cary Grant's kind of a big guy. But that is a tight fit in there.
It is. I like how he sort of is. He looks like the less confident of them because... He's got sort of like his hand up by his mouth. He doesn't know really where to look. He's got his, he's kind of like crunched forward a little bit, almost like he's hunched over. Does not look like he knows what's going on.
Yeah, it seems like he's kind of catching on to the gravity of the situation.
Oh, I think he knows. It's definitely bad. I do like his line here. When they get into the car, he says, well, he says,
don't tell me where we're going. Surprise me.
I swear to God, the first time I heard this, I thought, that's Roger Moore.
Yep.
That is exactly a Roger Moore style James Bond line.
Yep.
Sanders, I didn't recognize you with the clothes on.
You are very suspicious, Mr. Bond.
Oh, I find I live much longer that way.
You have a nasty habit of surviving.
Well, you know what they say about the fittest. Maybe I misjudged Stromberg. Any man who drinks Dom Perignon 52 can't be all bad.
Hey, you all right, buddy?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Are you with our group?
No, ma'am, I'm with the economy tour.
You're not a sportsman, Mr. Bond. Why did you break off the encounter with my pet python?
I discovered he had a crush on him.
Hang on, James.
The thought had occurred to me. Stinging in the rain.
That's not funny, 007.
You know? No, by all means, don't tell me where we're going. Yeah. Surprise me.
Keep it yourselves.
Yeah. He had to jet or whatever. Roger Moore had some of the best one-liners after leaving people dead.
Yeah, and that's why Roger Moore has been probably my favorite Bond. I mean, it's close, but I do like that kind of sarcastic, you know. And we talked about this. If you've listened to any of our work on Young Frankenstein, we talked about that relationship between Dr. Frankenstein / Frankenstein and Igor, and who's really in control of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Moore used those off-putting lines and that humor to stay as much in control of conversations and relationships as he could.
Yeah.
And I always liked that about him.
Yeah. As we're talking James Bond, to me, James Bond was Roger Moore, because when I discovered James Bond, that was the first Bond I remember seeing.
Yeah. Same with me.
In fact, the first James Bond I remember seeing was in the theater was Moonraker, because it was right after Star Wars.
Yeah, great movie.
You know, James Bond, they were going to do, I forgot what other, they had another movie lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Star Wars, they're like, oh, we got to capitalize on this.
A new space movie.
And they changed it to Moonraker. I loved that movie.
Oh, I did too.
Loved it. And then I got into watching all of the James Bonds when they would come out on TV. They were always super long because of how long they were initially, but then to add commercial breaks.
Yep.
My mom would always get so mad. You're not watching this because it won't end till midnight. Yeah, but it's James Bond, Mom.
And that was the thing. I could always kind of get away with, it's James Bond.
Yeah. So. Yeah, love James Bond. And I have come to respect what Sean Connery start it.
Sean Connery is still great, and I take nothing away from him. But I think that there was some... Well, and honestly, the guy who may have ended up being the best Bond was the Bond who had the shortest run.
Timothy Dalton.
George Lazenby.
Oh, he was horrible. Don't tell me you liked him.
See, I think he was terrible. Movie,
he was so bad that he couldn't do the accent that they actually had to overdub when he was pretending to be the Scottish professor.
Yeah. But there was something.
Now, Telly Savalas, he was a good bad guy.
Oh, Telly Savalas was amazing. I think Lazenby. He takes a bad rap at times.
Okay, well, but I think deservedly so. I thought you were going to say Timothy Dalton.
See, I don't like Timothy Dalton.
See, I loved it, but he was never going to make it, no matter what. He was not going to win, because it was right at the time they decided, well, let's PC Bond up a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and be a little bit more aware about how females are treated.
He's kind of a pretty boy.
And he just, as good as he is as an actor, Timothy Dalton just did not have a very good script, I think, with both of those.
Well, I agree with that.
And you had two episodes and he was done. And then they brought in the guy they really wanted, but he was still stuck in his contract with Remington Steele.
Yep.
They finally got Pierce Brosnan, who, by the way, was a great Bond in one movie. And then he was an okay Bond in the second movie, and then it was crap. The next installments, I hate all of those Bonds.
I almost thought he got too old to be Bond after that.
They got too stupid.
Even though, yeah, they did. Even though Roger Moore was, you know, 70 when he retired as Bond.
I think he was 68 or so when he was in A View to a Kill.
Mm-hmm.
He commented that the love interest that he was older than the girl's mom.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Like, ugh. And even he realized, okay, I get I'm James Bond, but come on, that's a little creepy.
Yeah. Well, and you get to be James Bond while you are convincingly James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Then you move on to something else.
Right.
But
I think that's what I've liked about Daniel Craig. I have liked his Bond. I love when they did Casino Royale, they went back to a kind of grittier, realistic kind of a Bond where he gets hurt. He gets, you know, he at one point he gets his butt handed to him.
Yeah.
And but it's a lot more real. It wasn't the goofy Pierce Brosnan Bonds the last two or three of those Bond movies. Now, Quantum of Solace was terrible. I'm not sure what they were doing with that.
I don't know that they know what they were doing.
But Skyfall, maybe one of my all-time favorite James Bonds of all of the James Bond stories. That is such a fantastic story.
Yeah, I definitely put it up there in my top two or three. So
it's freaking phenomenal. I love Skyfall. I could watch that over and over and over. Spectre, I think, was okay, but it wasn't great. So I'm hoping this next one, by the time we're, it doesn't come out till later this year. So hopefully it'll be all done with
Christmas 2020.
I think it's July of 2020. I thought it was coming middle of the year.
Maybe.
But it was No Time to Die coming out. Last one with Daniel Craig.
Yeah. And that I hope that he goes out high.
And then we'll end up having a completely different James Bond that nobody ever will recognize from this point forward, because that's the cool thing to do.
Right.
Instead of create your own new story, let's just go ahead and turn James Bond into something that he's not.
Yeah, and you know, let's not learn anything from the female Ghostbusters or any of these others.
Or the Charlie's Angels reboot wannabe.
Yeah.
That did not go well at all. Just because you've got sort of a politically correct agenda doesn't mean you've got a good movie.
Well, I think that one of the things they might need to learn is if you're doing it politically correct, you're probably not going to make any money. People just don't want to see it. It's not entertaining.
No, I mean, you could be aware of how people should conduct themselves.
Right.
But it's James Bond.
Yeah.
He's a spy. He's going to do whatever it takes to get the information or to get the bad guy.
Yeah,
you know?
he's a cad. And I'm not saying be demeaning to people.
No.
That's not what I'm saying at
all.
He's
a type.
Yes, he is. He is. And
by the way, spies tend to do whatever is necessary to get the information.
Right.
Whether you like it or not.
They don't hug it out.
Come on. Give daddy a hug. Come. Get away from me, you slant-eyed psycho.
Weirdo.
Dr. Evil. Come here, Scott. Give daddy a hug. Give daddy a hug. Get away from me, you weirdo.
Yeah, you just can't do that.
No.
So.
All right. So continuing in this scene, he has this great line right after he says, "Surprise me." Then he looks back and forth and looks and says, "You know,
I left some friends back there in the oak bar. They're going to think I'm awfully rude."
I'm wondering, is he saying that as if to say, they're going to inquire about me? Aren't you worried about that?
Well, and I kind of took it as he's trying to figure his way out of this.
Right.
But he's also still kind of concerned about his reputation. And
I'm rude.
Like, that it's like, wait a minute. In my old world 2 minutes ago, I was hanging out with these guys having this sort of business meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get interrupted by whatever this is. And you guys are making me look bad.
Yep.
You know, you're making me look bad to my friends. And I need to at least go let them know that I'm being kidnapped and it's not my fault that I didn't come back.
Yeah, in fact, and that may be the right way to interpret it, because his next line is,
couldn't we stop off at a drugstore for a moment?
And we cut off in the middle, I don't know, so that he can make a phone call, send another telegram. I don't know, the last telegram went so well. Do you really want to risk doing another one?
No kidding. Get kidnapped by even worse thugs.
So I love the fact that he's kind of doing all the talking. He's sort of that nervous person who's figuring, if I just keep talking, maybe I'll be able to figure something out.
Yeah, and when he has that kind of lean forward and, you know, presses his knuckle against his mouth, you can tell it's like the wheels are turning. I got to figure, and he's no dummy. You know, he's a bright guy. So how do I flip this?
No, I think it's what we said last week. With Hitchcock's decision to make him an ad executive, someone in advertising, you're used to thinking on your feet. You're used to trying to figure out how to use words to manipulate feeling or emotion.
That's right.
You're trying to sell something to somebody, right? You're not lying. Remember?
Right.
You're exaggerating.
That's right.
And I think he thinks himself a clever person.
And I think he is. And looking at the way he interacted with his secretary already, you know, he's fast on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see where we go from here.
I like that the one guy licked after he put his gun away seems to be really interested in what's going on the sidewalk outside of his window. He doesn't pay attention at all to the conversation. And the other guy feels bent on just staring ahead. Don't engage. Don't look. Don't make eye contact. You know what they say a lot of times when you're being held hostage, try to befriend your captors. Makes it harder for them to do their job.
Absolutely.
So whether he realizes it or not, he's kind of doing that.
Yes,
Thornhill here.
I have a feeling he's gotten away with a lot in his life just because of his likability.
Likeability and his ability to talk himself out of corners.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, we're going to end with that. I do think it's funny that just as it ends, as we see in the background, there's a cop directing traffic. So he never tries to make any attempt of waving at whatever officer they're passing on the street. Of course, the cop's got his back to us now as in the rearview window. But I do think it's interesting that just another day on the street, just another car going about its business and a cop directing traffic and he's being held against his will.
Well, and there really probably wouldn't have been a whole lot that officer could have done because he doesn't have a radio on him. His radio would be in his car.
Do they have portable? Yeah, because they wouldn't have portables at this time.
No, not yet. So,
Car 54, where are you?
They did. It'd be like the big, huge bag radio that they had at D-Day. But yeah, no, I don't think they would have had the communication. Certainly not the officer on the beat.
Nope.
Because they used to have those phone boxes on the street.
Right,
run
that's
up
right.
To. The officer would put their card in or put their key in and then open the box and make the phone call to the police department. So, so they wouldn't have even had that ability at this point.
All right. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this minute number 7. Before we kind of wrap things up, do you have anything in this minute that you wanted to go back and circle around to? Anything we forgot to discuss?
No, I think we've covered it.
I am interested to see how it's going to play out into tomorrow because we're in mid-conversation. And I wonder how many of our other fellow Minute Movies by Minute folks are going to see the parallels of James Bond, or at least the way we see James Bond movies, to what you and I keep seeing in this.
It'll be interesting to hear. I think some of them will pick up on it.
I hope so. Because this is the weird thing with a collaborative project is nobody's really sharing with each other. We're all kind of giving it to the ringmaster, Jim O'Kane,
right.
Puts them out. So, you know, thankfully we're first, so we don't have to worry about whether we match anybody else's ideas. We get to kick this off.
Well, and we may even have some groups that aren't James Bond fans,
right.
So who wouldn't pick up on that?
It's entirely true that they're going to come into a different angle, which I think is kind of neat about this whole project.
Yeah,
of getting
absolutely.
Individual teams that have their own Movies by Minutes podcast in whatever genre or whatever, you know, franchise. But we're all working together to deliver a piece of this movie and see how does it all... It's fun to listen how these all come out by the end.
Yeah.
Because like the Die Hard Minute, I enjoyed a lot of episodes and then there were some I'm like, are you guys taking it seriously? Are you watching the same movie I am?
Right.
But then, you know, just when you think, okay, this is not my cup of tea, you move on to the next team. So
right.
It's kind of nice. You get to just get little samples of people's work all with one simple project. All right, Walt, well, before we set the table for where we are coming up tomorrow on Hump Day, one of our favorite days with Igor as a part of our team in the Wilder Ride, where do people learn more about us?
Best place to learn more about us is on our website, thewilderride.com, and you from there will find all of our social media, all of our Facebook stuff, which I guess qualifies as social media, all of our past episodes, our Patreon episodes that you might want to check out, and everything you want to know about Alan and I. So check that out again, thewilderride.com. Our focus is the works of Gene Wilder. So if you're a Gene Wilder fan, you will definitely want to go check all that out.
And definitely let everybody know if you're enjoying this that the Hitchcock Minute is found on Apple Podcasts. It's found on Google Play. Other RSS feeds are probably picking it up as well. So check your podcatcher of choice. You can learn a lot more about it by going to hitchcockminute.com. Also on social media, join in some discussion on the Facebook page, The Man on Washington's Nose, or go to Twitter at Hitchcock Minute. And come on back tomorrow, Wednesday, for where we will continue the conversation, Thornhill saying, so that I can explain I'm being kidnapped. That's definitely a very funny line to tell your kidnappers you need to leave a message. By the way, I'm being kidnapped. Don't wait up for me.
Right.
And we'll end with the Cadillac pulling up to the front steps of a house, a very nice looking house in a very posh, very nice area of New York. So you're going to have to find out what's going on more by coming back tomorrow for this, the Hitchcock Minute.
The Wilder Hitchcock?
No, it's not the Wilder Hitchcock. It's
It's
Wilder Ride. The.
Bob. Oh.
It's Ride. The Wilder Ride.
Now, where does Igor fit into all this?
He's a hump day, Wednesday.
Oh, gotcha.
He always welcomes new people on Wednesday.
Goodbye, Mr. Thornhill, wherever you are.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Hitchcock Minute. I'm Alan Sanders here from The Wilder Ride. And this... God, why am I f***ing this up? Why is this so hard? I don't know. I think I could read.
You would think.
Where's the intro? There it is. Okay. And 3, 2, 1. And they changed it to Moonraker. Thank you. I just went out of my head. I was saying Goldfinger. That's not right. And they changed it to Moonraker. 1 minute of scream time. 1 minute of screen time. God damn it. 1 minute of screen time per episode.
So are we doing this 1 minute of screen time per episode?
I think so. I'm going to do that all over again and leave this for an outtake because, Jesus, what is wrong with me? I didn't even have anything to drink. Maybe that's the problem.
That's the problem.